I don't write Chinese anymore, so I have a friend who writes the letters, and my sister-in-law and I communicate with them in that fashion. It's translated into from Chinese to English to us, and then from us in English to Chinese back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't send that kind of money. We just send tea money, is what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they claim that they live pretty well, you know, strange as it may be, they only make $34 a month, and all the kids eat. They have all the medicine they want. They have housing, clothing, everything. There are no wants. At least that's what they tell me, or that's what they're allowed to say. But that letter is walked over into Hong Kong, so it's so I know that it's a real letter. It's
mm-hmm.
not a fake letter or intercepted letter.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a schedule anytime. It's just when it's available, when they have a letter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time. Or when we get some bad news, like my nephew tried to swim the Hong Kong Bay to get out. He was captured by the red gunboat.
mm-hmm.
And then he was thrown in jail,
mm-hmm.
solitary for 30 days. It hurt him mentally because, from what I understand, that he's a little bit mentally affected. So, but it's still that way in China. That's why I say it's interesting that they say one thing to the outside world and then the inside is not real.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What languages were spoken at home?
When I was little, in Chinatown you had to speak Chinese. So I spoke Yingping style Chinese, which is not Samyak. Like in Chinese school we learn Samyak.
Mm-hmm.
But in at the house I speak Yingping with my dad, and everybody speaks Yingping, and it's pronounced a little bit different than Samyak when you read the same word, because when my father reads it, it's nothing like Samyak at all.
Mm-hmm.
The sound is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in the down tone.
Mm-hmm.
Where Samyak, you speak in the up tone.
Right.
And Yingping goes down. So it's a little bit different.
Uh-huh.
But it is Southern Chinese style.
Now, did they have to force you to speak Chinese at home?
No.
It wasn't a...
The reason why is that in Chinatown, everybody had to speak Chinese or they wouldn't speak to you. That's in the stores, restaurants, and anywhere outside of Chinatown. If you were in the boundaries of Chinatown and you were to talk to somebody, if you don't say how are you in Chinese, and you don't say thank you in Chinese, if you don't say yum cha in Chinese, if you don't say that, they think you're a smart aleck punk or something like that. In other words, you're a rascal and you're kind of you're not a very courteous person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the Chinese society was in Chinatown. So you had to speak Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to buy moi, you can't go and say, give me 5 cents worth of candy. They'll look at you. They'll say to you in Chinese, Nihoma, you know, what do you want? And if you don't answer in Chinese, you don't get an answer. They understand English. All the Chinese understand English. But they do not condescend to you to acknowledge they understand English.
Mm-hmm.
They'll speak to you in Chinese and only in Chinese. So in order to get around where when I was little, you had to speak Chinese. You had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Then at home, you speak Chinese because at home you speak Chinese, and when you're at school, you speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like my father said, to be gifted with two languages is better than being gifted with one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be Chinese unless you can't speak Chinese.
And how many years did you go to Chinese school?
Yes. Till about 15. I went 10 years. The way we go to Chinese school is, after we get out of American school at 3 o'clock, at 3:30 we go. So it's 5:30 to 6. So we go 3:30 to 4:30 to 5:30 to 6 o'clock. Then we go home. And you get 1 hour of Chinese reading Chinese, and they interpret what it's about. And then the second half, you learn to write the language, and you learn to copy, you know, calligraphy in the large scrolls. And then one day it'd be like how to write formal Chinese letters, the old style, and Another is you learn about the food, cooking food, and the Chinese lifestyle in China, bringing water and things, and sing song about birds and things if you were in the smaller grades. And they then teach you, when you're in about the fifth or sixth grade, they teach you to use the abacus.
Mm-hmm.
And then they teach, then there's a little bit of Chinese philosophy. And it's like taking different periods of classes. And it's always around the corner in Chinatown.
Which school was that? Or what was the name of the school?
I don't remember the name of the school as much as location was right next to the fire station on Aliso Street.
How many students were there in the class?
There was over 100, 150 of us, at least. At least 100.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the kids are half Chinese and half Mexican, and some are half Caucasian and half Chinese, and they all go to Chinese school. And there's half Japanese and half Chinese as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in Chinatown, anybody who's even got 1/8, 1/16 blood in Chinese is considered Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have this bloodline of pure Chinese. The Chinese are more accepting that if you are any part of your family is Chinese, you're accepted as Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to go to Chinese school. You pay to go to Chinese school.
How much did you pay? Do you remember?
In the real old days, it was like $15 a month. And you go Monday to Saturday. Saturday is test day. And everybody tries to fall sick or run ditch class. But it was a pretty even balance of learning Chinese. And you know, you learn things like making kites and play ping pong. That's all included.
Do you think that a lot more people would have gone to Chinese school had the fee been lower? I mean, was that the price that you had to pay part of one way of keeping it?
No.
The enrollment down.
The enrollment, the price was very cheap considering that all they charge is how much to pay the tuition of the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It was not to make any excess profits. That's one thing about the Chinese school. It was to encourage the Chinese kids or people to learn Chinese. And all that they charged was enough to pay the tuition of a teacher. And it's hard to find teachers, in fact. And generally, it's somebody who's just fresh from China who can teach.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get two or three of these teachers, and they would teach. And if you miss a character, they hit you with a bamboo switch. It's a very hard school. I thought it was hard because when you have to memorize 50 characters and you miss 10, they'll hit you 10 times. If you miss 50, they'll hit you 50 times. You missed 100, they'll hit you 100. And then if you miss more than that, you better leave.
Well, then I'm surprised that you actually went to Chinese school for 10 years.
Well, it was just one of those things that your father makes you go. I mean, it's not your choice. You know, if they feel that you have to learn it, they'll put you to school. It's just for your own good, in other words.
And you never rebelled and said you didn't want to go anymore?
Well, when I got up to high school, I did, mm-hmm. Yes. Because then I was in athletics and I wanted to participate in the athletics program in high school. So, also, it took me about 3/4 to an hour to go from high school back to Chinatown. And that was too far. I could never make it to school. You know,
mm-hmm.
They only give you a half hour between school in Chinese school.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't, you know, an hour you'll miss about so much of Chinese school that you couldn't really,
mm-hmm.
You couldn't really take advantage of it. And by that time, Chinese school had moved to a new Chinatown. I was in old Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And as it was too far.
Mm-hmm. Did your brother go to Chinese school too?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
By the time he was going, he was 12-year-old already. He knew so much Chinese. He didn't have to go to Chinese school, but he went.
Uh-huh.
He went until he was about, I guess, 16, 17, 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the Chamber of Commerce and the Chinese community that if you lived in Chinatown, you should go to Chinese school.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't hurt you. Yeah, it actually was good because of discipline, and it did a lot of good for us because when I was going to Chinese school, we learned to multiply multiplication about 1 year before we went to grammar school. And by the time we got it in grammar school, we could multiply 12 times 12 is 144, and the other illiterates couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So all the Chinese kids were mathematically trained already. Mm-hmm. We mentally memorized everything. So it didn't hurt to go to Chinese school, let me say that.
What American schools did you attend?
Oh, I went to Macy Elementary School and Castellar, which is the one in Chinatown now, and Central Junior High, which is the one up on top of, which is now the Board of Education, up on top of the hill. And I went to Polytechnic High School,
mm-hmm.
which is down on 20th and Grand, which is now Trade Tech. That's where I went.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about your brother?
My brother went to Lincoln High, and he went to SC after that. He went to Lincoln, it's the only one I could remember. I don't know where he went for junior high school, but I know he went to Lincoln.
What did he study at SC?
Structural engineering.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated in 1936.
Mm-hmm. And your brother's name?
George Tong.
George Tong.
His Chinese name is Mok Phuc Sing. And his papers are George Tong.
How come he had a surname, Tong?
In the old days, the Chinese used to... we used to have papers. And the only way a person could come over was to have another person's papers that was... it was like having passport papers, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how it came about, but since I was born here, I didn't have any of this problem. But apparently anybody who came from China who was not previously born here or born of a merchant who had legal status in the United States, you couldn't come. My father had legal status, but he had to wait so long. And I don't know how it transpired, but he was able to get my brother's papers, but it was under the name of George Tong, not under Mok. And my father never explained it, but it's been cleared through the FBI for 4 years investigation because my brother designed a flying wing for the Douglas Corporation during the Second World War. And he did one of the best flying wings at that time for the Second World War, and had the longest bomb carrying capacity and everything. And because he was Chinese, the FBI was to investigate his whole life span here in the United States, whether he was a Chinese spy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually accredited the papers and everything to where it wasn't worthwhile for George to change his name to a Mok ever.
Because
mm-hmm. they'd done all the investigation from the time he was born to the time he was 24-year-old and out of college, that it'd be a terrible waste of all that government money that they'd done to check his credentials. So my brother decided to just leave it as George Tong.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first Chinese licensed structural engineer in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first Chinese to break the color line. At that time it was all Caucasian, and it was a very high society of structural engineers, and there was no other group that was allowed in it except by examination, and it's a state examination. And my brother was determined to be the first one, so he broke through the line. And
how do you spell his surname?
T-O-N-G.
T-O-N-G.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my sister-in-law is Betty Tong. I think she's written up in one of these. Her family's from Lodi and mm-hmm. Modesto. And my brother's children are both structural engineers. One of them just graduated from SC a year ago in the master's program, Bruce Tong. And my oldest nephew, Ron, he's 30. He's also a licensed structural engineer. And my niece is Vicky Tong. She's a UCLA grad. She did a paper on my grandfather, Mok Chuk, her great-grandfather. She did a paper on him through one of the ethnic studies at UCLA and you might, I don't know if she has, I know that she borrowed my grandfather's passport papers and things like that, immigration papers, and from what I understand, she did quite a thorough study of it. It was mm-hmm. just for her own paper for class, and I never got to read it. I think it's probably very interesting, but it got very interesting in that we were talking about things mm-hmm. that were happening and such. And the only reason that Betty got involved was that somebody called her up and said that the Chinese was not given recognition in the railroad contribution to the development of the Southwest. Well, my grandfather, Mok Chuk, happened to be the hiring agent for the railroad company. We hired a lot of Chinese, and they worked on the railroad gang. And my grandfather has a watch that was given to him in 24 karat, one of those pocket watch, with the thanking him in appreciation for his service to the railroad. And Betty is, somebody got hold of her, I guess the society did,
mm-hmm.
and asked if she knows anything about it. And Betty felt that somebody should be represented, so she went. I didn't have any time, so. But I know that my grandfather was one of the contributors to that. And
mm-hmm.
The Chinese came first as a railroad, and then after they left for the farming and other parts, then the Japanese took over the railroad work mm-hmm. up in the Bakersfield area and such. And I think that generation is just starting to pass away now. They're up in their 90s, and they would remember some of that railroad work.
Mm-hmm.
I came in contact with one of my Yingping village people. He's not a Mok, but he came over when my grandfather recruited him, and he became a cook in the Southern Pacific Railroad gang. And he told me about how it was like to be a Chinese out in the railroad gang. And he would cook Chinese food, and the way it works is that they pay him $1 a day, and they would bank it in Los Angeles. And my grandfather would bank it.
Mm.
And we give them a receipt that, you know, they banked it so much for into your name. And on top of that, my grandfather had a grocery store. And they would be like out in the desert somewhere in Mojave digging for the railroad track. And he would in turn pack the foods that they want, like lok cheng and dried duck and tofu and things like that. All the dried Chinese stuff. And pack it in their name. And put it on one of these trains that are headed out to the road gang. And so the Chinese always had Chinese food,
mm-hmm.
like the duck eggs and mm-hmm. the, you know, all the preserved stuff. And my friend, who I always used to call Uncle, he would tell me about these things. And he worked on the railroad gang as far as into the state of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and into southern El Paso. And even as far as New Orleans before he came back this way. He worked up in the Utah area and up in the Nevada area, so I know the Chinese that came over with my grandfather's recruiting had worked in these sectors. And some even went as far north as Oregon and into Idaho sectors, because the Chinese, they'll work anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
they'll try anything. They're
right.
really, and like Donner Pass, they don't give much credit. They do now in the books. But the Chinese really gave their life, their best of their men to drill the tunnel. And that all came out of the San Francisco sector, where Leland Stanford and Crocker was up there hiring Chinese out of San Francisco to dig that pass through Donner. And a lot of them died during the winter season, because that's when they were doing a lot of dynamite. And so the Chinese did contribute quite a bit in the construction of the railroad industry in the southern part of the United States here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a plaque somewhere up in Saugus or somewhere that Betty said, finally acknowledging the contribution of the Chinese, that
mm-hmm.
you know, they contributed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of other Chinese families here that must have had their grandfathers or their mothers, you know, their fathers, that they contributed in this part of building railroads in the southern part of California and into Arizona and such. I'm sure they're there. It's just the problem of finding them,
mm-hmm.
if there's any records.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have very much record on that at all, except that I know from my father and from my brother telling me certain things and showing up with some of these, and some friends that in the very, very late years of their life telling me that my grandfather was doing such and such, and then talking to other people, we find out that was the case. I never saw the watch until I was 24-year-old when my father left in the security box in my brother's name, that I actually got to see the watch. I never did know there was such a thing around.
Uh-huh.
And I know that my grandfather was a very big time gambler, so I knew that he was in that corruption of business too, so he was in a little bit of everything.
Uh-huh.
He had quite a reputation for being that type of person.
What was your grandfather's name?
Mok Chuck.
Uh-huh.
And he was about 6 feet. They said he was about 6 feet, 6 feet too. He was like a mandarin.
Mm.
And my brother is 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
My nephews are 6'3 and 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
My niece is taller than I am. I think she's 5'8 and a half. We're the short part of the family.
Okay. Where has your family lived in L.A.? What streets?
All 50th and Central is where I was born. And we had a house. I sold that in the 1940s, about 48, 49, we sold it. And the rest of the time I lived in Chinatown until I was 18, 19 year old, from all that time. So I can remember when I was about 4 year old, at least that's what they said. At 4 year old, I was already going to Chinese school. So I know I was in Chinatown at 4.
Mm.
So, I was there for up until, see, that would be 1933 and 19, say about 1933, I guess, 34, 33, in Chinatown until, I was the last to leave Chinatown, so that's about 1948.
What do you mean by the last to leave?
Well, they were tearing Chinatown down, and all the Chinese were moving in 1940s to 1948s, they were moving to China City, which is on Spring and Ord, and that's part of the, mostly the merchants, and where F. Sui Wan store is, and where Albert Wong's butcher stores are, and Hung Fa Chin, and Set San, which is the jade restaurant, and Zhong Mei, and those, and Guang En Long, and some of those places, they all moved to what we call China City. It was an attempt to settle in another Chinatown because the original Chinatown was half destroyed. Chinatown was destroyed in 1935, 36, 37. I'm not sure which one of those dates. The Union Station where it was sitting was the other half of old Chinatown. It was a large, that was a whole from Macy to Aliso, and past Aliso going halfway to First Street was Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese farmers used to come on Friday night or Saturday, and they come to Chinatown to eat, and they bring their families and stuff. They do the shopping. And at that time, there was quite a bit of Chinese still in farming. Farming was mostly garden, you know, the more vegetable stuff. And they were gardening, farming over here in the San Fernando Valley. It used to produce a lot of asparagus and peaches and things like that. And they were also on the south end of the city, like in Norwalk, Alamedas, and places like that for celery, onions, and things. And they supplied a great deal of the lettuce and the green crops into the city. The time when the Union Station was coming in, they deported, they pushed everybody out of that old part of Chinatown. Part of the Chinese population moved to 10th and San Pedro. That's where the Han family is, and also the Central Market around there are all Chinese. That's because of the migration from Chinatown into those sectors.
Mm-hmm.
The family part of their group was living between 10th Street and to 20th. In fact, the Presbyterian Church near 20th had all Chinese families, Liang families, the Han families, the Kuang families, a lot of them moved into that area. And then the other half of that moved to China City, and then part of that moved to New Chinatown. New Chinatown, what you see now, is a product of a couple of American guys that took a piece of property and built a bunch of concrete building shops, sold them for about $40,000-$50,000 to these Chinese merchants that moved out of Chinatown in hopes of starting a real Chinatown. At one time, that Chinatown was going to be like San Francisco Chinatown. One of the Chinese in San Francisco, who was a multimillionaire at that time, was going to donate a whole bunch of dragon bronze casting of dragons on lanterns like mm-hmm. Grand Avenue. Mm-hmm. They're going to make something like a Grand Avenue Chinatown. And it fell apart because the American developers were kind of wishy-washy. They weren't very, I think it was just a promotion. And they sold a lot of these buildings to the Chinese. My friend Ming Fong, that have Fsui Wan in Chinatown, was one of the first buyers of these buildings. The main part of what Chinatown is now in Chinatown is like Manchun, right? Where the fountain is,
uh-huh.
and the Golden Pagoda. That was the original Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
That was the original. Then after that, across the street over on the northwest side is the newer part of that Chinatown. The Li Po and all that, and the Rice Bowl, all that was the original Chinatown as a product of the migration of when they destroyed Chinatown, where I live,
mm-hmm.
and built it into the Union Station.
Mm-hmm.
It took a couple of years to build the Union Station. Then up on Los Angeles Street, from Sunset going south for two blocks to Aliso, on both sides of the street was Chinese, like the Chi family, Raymond Chi's family, and Peter Chi's family, and Quan family, and Chinese Chamber of Commerce, Chinese School, the Methodist Church, Suzhou, the Fong, Ming Chun, Ming Yan Fong, Fsui Wan, and Fsion. Those are the two oldest antique stores. And my next door neighbor, the Chus, who is Chinese, and he married a Caucasian woman, and they used to live out of Chinatown. They had a Chinese store,
mm-hmm.
and the Lee families that were next door to us, and we were the last of the families to move out. And
where did you move to?
Well, after I moved out in 48, 49, I moved to New Chinatown to an apartment there. I only stayed there for 2 years, and then I was drafted in the Army, so I didn't stay there that long.
Mm-hmm.
Then after I came back, well, I didn't come back to Chinatown. I went down to SC to go to school, and then I lived away from Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
By then, much of the Chinese families, the third generations, most of them had started to settle down and got married, and they live away from Chinatown. Only the shopkeepers and the restaurateurs and the merchants that had stores and businesses in Chinatown was living close to Chinatown. And that area was populated with Italian family, first generation Italian families, and a lot of Mexican families.
Mm-hmm.
But all around there was Chinese families living just to be close to their business and such.
Do you think Chinese like to live near other Chinese too, for other reasons?
Yes. Well, if you marry a Chinese girl or a man or whatever from China where you cannot speak the language, one of the very strong considerations is to be in an area where you can speak the language and you can communicate. It's kind of a safety factor, because something could happen. There's no way to protect yourself. You can't call for police in Chinese and anybody to answer you. You can't talk on the telephone, and you would like to at least run out and talk to another Chinese, and they could help you,
mm-hmm.
whether it's somebody getting hurt or somebody getting a heart attack. In other words, somebody you can speak with Chinese about your ills and your things.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have that. Go to a dentist who's a Chinese, or go to a doctor who's a Chinese,
mm-hmm.
go to an attorney to sue somebody in Chinese. It's important that that first or second generation, if you can't speak too much English, I think it is important to be close by. It's just a, it's a safety factor, mm-hmm. and I think it is important. And that's why a lot of the people who come from China tend to congregate around Chinatown. That's why the second and third, first major generation of 10, 20 years ago are still in Chinatown, because when they first came, they couldn't speak English. So they had to find an apartment in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese in Chinatown charge overly. They charge as much as the Caucasian market charge for apartments. They charge more. It's almost like taking advantage of another Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a real fair, equitable situation. In fact, it's a little bit unfair, but that's not me to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I knowingly know that that's true. You live in Chinatown, you pay as much rent as you would in the Caucasian market, and you don't get as nice the surroundings as a Caucasian market.
Mm-hmm.
It's
they feel they have you over a barrel.
Exactly. They got you over the barrel on everything, in marketing and food and, you know, all the niceties that you find in the outside Chinatown could be had for less.
Mm-hmm.
But because you can't speak the language, you're at the mercy of the merchants. And the one bad thing that I feel that is over there, and there's no